I'm Jordan Abel, Director of Public Programs at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, our guest is CEO of Bend the Arc, Stosh Kotler. And now join Aaron Hontapper on stage at the JCCSF as he introduces Stosh Kotler.
In the first book of the Bible, Genesis, the human species is described as starting off with what we might very generously call starting off on the wrong foot. Adam and Eve's two children, Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel, have some sort of problem, which results in the older brother murdering the younger one. There are many interesting pieces of this narrative, but I'd like to touch on one. After Cain carries out this heinous act, God asks Cain about his brother's whereabouts. Cain impudently replies, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Now, from the modern-day vantage point, the character in the story named God, Adonai, Elohim, created the universe, including the planet Earth, just a few short chapters prior. Given God's ability to create existence as we know it, it seems highly plausible that God already knew Abel's whereabouts before asking Cain where he was. Thus, God's question, "Where's your brother?" was rhetorical. And Cain's response, "Am I my brother's keeper?" was also rhetorical. And we answer with a resounding yes. The question of whether or not each one of us is responsible to our fellow human is not a mere theoretical question. It plays out in each of our lives every day of the year. The person living on the San Francisco street asking for assistance, we all too often pretend not to notice. The stories we read in the daily paper or see on Facebook and other forms of social media about unjust things happening in our city, our state, our country, or somewhere else entirely. All these instances of injustice are interconnected. All these daily occurrences are undergirded by the idea of intersectionality, the notion that all forms of oppression, all forms of destruction are interconnected. Judging a sister by the color of her skin is akin to judging a brother by his sexual orientation. Mistreating a woman because of her ethnicity is akin to mistreating a brother because of his nationality. Yet intersectionality is not just about how all forms of justice and injustice are interrelated, how the structures of oppression of one group are linked to the oppression of another group. It's also about how the only way to move things forward is to consider one another as integral pieces of the puzzle. Whether a student or professor, activist or organizer, 20-something or 80-something, all of us have the role to play in taking responsibility for improving our world, for working to transform the what it is into what can be. An unrepentant modern-day prophet, Bella Abzug, said the following: "Women's struggle for equality worldwide is about more than equality between men and women. Our struggle is about reversing the trends of social, economic, political, and ecological crisis, a global nervous breakdown. Our struggle is about creating sustainable lives and attainable dreams. And never forget, we women are half the human race." With this in mind, it's my pleasure to introduce you tonight to Stosh Kotler. Stosh Kotler is one of the most important voices in the Jewish community today. As CEO of Bend the Arc, the leading progressive Jewish organization working to make this nation one which honors the dignity of all communities, she's currently at the forefront of advancing civil and human rights in the United States. With more than 25 years of leadership experience as an educator, trainer, and organizer within social and economic justice movements, Kotler has worked on such issues as domestic workers' rights, gender-based violence prevention, immigration reform, marriage equality, voting rights, and on, both expanding social awareness of the inequity of those living on the margins and implementing social change to transform communities into their potential. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Stosh Kotler, and at the request of Rabbi Sidney Mintz, an important member of the board of directors of Bend the Arc, let me also introduce you to the shoes of the new revolution. Stosh.
Good evening. It is an incredible honor to be here. Thank you so much, Aaron, for that introduction. And first, I just want to reiterate, Bend the Arc is a national Jewish organization focusing on the most consequential, basic civil and human rights issues happening in our country: racial justice, economic inequality, LGBT rights, immigration reform. We are truly working to save the progressive soul of the American Jewish community, and it is just an incredible gift to be with you tonight. And I'm pleased that tonight the topic and the title of this lecture is A Practice of Everyday Revolution: Reclaiming Jewish Communal Purpose in the Age of Trump. There's a story from Vilna Ghetto about the hidden power of our tradition. The story takes place in World War II as the Nazis assumed power over all of Europe. Vilna had been a cultural capital and was home to a famous printing press that printed important editions of holy and ancient Jewish texts. Now, like many of the ghettos, it was also home to Jewish resistance. The story goes that resistance fighters had to resort to melting down the lead Hebrew letters of the printing press to make the bullets they needed to fight the Nazis and to survive. It's an apocryphal story. It most likely never took place. But it's immortalized in a poem by Avram Sutzkever. I hope I have pronounced that name correctly. And the poem is as follows. Letter by melting letter the lead, liquefied bullets, gleamed with thoughts, a verse from Babylon, a verse from Poland, seething, flowing into the one mold, now must Jewish grit, long concealed in words, detonate the world in a shot. Like many stories from this time in our history, the tale is a mix of starkly terrifying and deeply inspiring, and it teaches us something. It teaches us that even in the bleakest of times, our words and our wisdom can serve as the substance of our survival, that they can be tools of the resistance. And we can even melt this story itself down, repurpose it like the lead from the printing press, take its embedded insight and form it into something new, something needed to face our current reality and rebuild our future. This is what I want to talk about this evening: the many, many ways in which our tradition is and can be revolutionary. The ways that we, as Jews, can and truly must draw on our prophetic inheritance and put it to work right now. The interpretation of our texts, traditions, practices, codes, cultures, and identity are widely debated. For every rabbi who pulls a verse from Torah to elevate notions of social justice, there is another rabbi who can counterpoint with a different verse, amplifying a worldview that is anything but just. I would contend, however, surprise, surprise, Stosh Kotler, Bend the Arc, that Jewishness and Jewish identity, Jewish practice, Jewish wisdom has a subversive, even radical orientation that lives within the fabric of our holiest teachings and consequently lives in our people's spiritual DNA. I believe that the very experience of being Jewish and doing Jewish in 2017 is, at its heart, a practice of everyday revolution. We are living in an unprecedented and historic moment in America. A moment when minority communities are under attack from the most powerful voices in the land and the same powerful voices that are sworn to protect them. At a moment when anti-Semitism has moved aggressively out of the shadows and Jewish reporters and activists have been threatened with insult, injury, and death. A moment when the progress many of you in this audience fought to win and others of us have benefited from our entire lives, such as women's reproductive health and autonomy, that progress is now at risk. These rollbacks are egregious, and they deserve our full and unabiding attention. Yet, what makes this moment unprecedented, isn't the conservative nature of these attacks on the civil rights of communities of color, immigrant communities, Muslim communities, Jewish communities, communities of people with disabilities, and women? We've always lived in a country whose origins are inextricably linked to our current moment, to violence that has never been acknowledged, let alone healed. Whether we consider the founding violence to indigenous nations and Native Americans, or the devastation of slavery and unending Jim Crow. Those histories and so many others continue to shape our national identity, our collective American story, and all notions of freedom, prosperity, and human dignity. What is altogether different are the serious challenges to our democracy itself. We just went through the first presidential election since the Civil Rights era without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act, which resulted in 868 polling places closed in states that were previously subject to federal oversight, a crystal clear case of voter suppression. We now have our elected officials promoting alternative facts and outright lying on a daily basis. We are seeing the vilification of our free press. There are government servants who attended conferences related to climate change who have been put on lists. There was an attempt to unlawfully use the executive branch to ban Muslims from entering the United States. And of course, this goes on and on, hour by hour, day by day. We have an administration that is quickly consolidating power into a very small and quite unorthodox configuration while creating confusion and conflict between branches of government, between citizens and the government, and between our government and the wider world. It is my opinion that these are all tests. We are all being tested. We are being tested to see if we notice how quickly our rights are being eroded. We are being tested to see how strongly we will resist. We are being tested to see how long it will take to wear us down. They are testing to see how much and how quickly they can shift the ground under our feet and remove the features of our democracy that we rely on for due process, checks and balances, and the retention of our basic civil liberties and constitutional rights. This is not normal. And this is not partisan. Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Greens, Libertarians, all of us should be concerned. We cannot afford to respond in ordinary ways. We cannot live with the cost and the consequences of silence. In this historic moment in America, we need to access and embrace the values and practices of our Jewish tradition that I believe are designed for survival, are designed to speak truth to power, are designed to be a moral light in the wilderness. This is the time for Jews to unleash our revolutionary tradition. I'm going to explore this idea from four perspectives tonight. First, let's look at where these concepts are embedded in our tradition and what we can learn by excavating them. Then, let's consider how well our community is doing at embodying these values, or perhaps how not well we're doing. Third, I want to dig in more deeply on why this idea of countercultural Judaism is so badly needed right now and what's truly at stake. And last, I want to discuss what this could look like by looking at 10 ways our community and institutions can put our prophetic values to work in this critical time. So let's start with our tradition. This evening, I'd like us to explore the possibility that many authentic expressions of our tradition are inherently countercultural and therefore relatively radical, and in ways we don't often consider, and also in ways that will help us overcome the dangers of our political reality today. Let's take three examples. I'll start with Shabbat. Shabbat is the weekly practice of sanctifying time and creating the conditions that allow us to experience a taste of heaven, as they say. When observed regularly, and of course there are many, many ways to observe Shabbat, Shabbat can bring about a shift in everyday consciousness. It can be a powerful sustainability practice for individuals and for the community. And Shabbat helps us balance the dual needs of work and rest. This is a brilliant concept in general, but think about how game-changing it must have been to assert, years and years ago, that slaves and animals, in addition to the wealthy and owning class, had a sacred right to a day of rest. In today's terms, that would be as extreme as extending a guaranteed day off to all service workers. No operating bus or subway access, no police available for non-life-threatening situations, no domestic workers to care for our children or elderly family members. It would present many of us with a new set of inconveniences. And more incredible is that it would assert the equal value of the people doing those absolutely critical jobs. While I personally have often thought about Shabbat as a restorative practice, it is also a great equalizing practice, and that is a radical idea. I'll use the Talmud as my second example of revolutionary Judaism. The Talmud, a central text of rabbinic Judaism, is written such that multiple arguments or points of view are given alongside one another and codified together on the same exact page. What does this show us and tell us? It implores us actually to recognize the value and the necessity of the minority opinion, and it allows the future reader to remember the minority view when grappling with current challenges. If we were to extend this philosophy to social norms, we can imagine then a society that values inclusivity and diversity of opinion at every single level. Picture our communal institutions, our private enterprises, and our government embodying the true diversity of the American population. And that, too, is an absolutely radical idea. And third, for my example, I'd like to talk about the biblical concept of Shemitah, which literally is a word that means release and is the extension of the concept of the Sabbath into the broader economy. Every 7 years, a range of agricultural and economic correctives are made in order to recalibrate society. Debts are forgiven, land ownership is relinquished, and society experiences a collective reset. What is the effect of that communal recalibration? Well, it inoculates against runaway inequality and makes an agricultural society more sustainable. Today, in our modern economy, Americans are drowning in debt. Poor people and middle-class people are living in cycles of debt dependence and paying exorbitant interest rates to get basic needs met, whether those include putting food on the table, visiting a doctor, or getting a college education, which we know is the single most significant indicator of entering into the middle class. Think about those who resort to taking payday or car title loans, often at triple-digit interest rates, or your children, or some of us, who carry student loan debt that will follow you, us, me, for decades. Shemitah would literally change the course of our lives. And I haven't even begun to talk about what it could look like for private property redistribution, which would truly be altogether game-changing. So I think it's fascinating and it's notable that I haven't even mentioned the ancient prophets. And while I do truly feel passionately moved by the agitations of Isaiah and Miriam and Amos and Jeremiah, it's interesting to note that no one need to seek out the prophets themselves to find the prophetic wisdom embedded in the mainstream, the actual mainstream of our tradition. Similarly, I haven't begun to talk about the more recent prophetic leaders who we as American Jews often call on for their moral clarity in the face of the biggest injustices of our modern world. I'm talking about the words and actions of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, Rabbi Joachim Prince, and other rabbis of the civil rights era. And I'm talking about the innovative labor leaders like Rose Schneiderman, Betty Friedan, and the groundbreaking Bella Abzug, women who should be celebrated in American Jewish culture but are sadly often forgotten. Our tradition is just so very rich, and we have inherited such a precious gift. So there's so much more we could actually dig into and discuss, but now I want to turn to the next question, which is, how are we doing at being spiritual revolutionaries and prophetic rabble-rousers? And how well is our community embodying these values? Are we, as a community, actually embodying this subversive tradition we've inherited? Do our institutions and Jewish organizations provide a new generation of American Jews with an empathetic, morally courageous community that lives out the radical teachings of our tradition in service to transforming this very shattered world? I would argue that our communal institutions are not succeeding in transmitting the most compelling and often the most agitational teachings of our ancestors. Our community is not providing enough opportunities for Jews to experience this underdog wisdom and worldview. And I believe that this is in part, actually, I believe it's much of the reason that too many younger Jews and even some older Jews are staying away from Jewish institutional life.
You're listening to CEO of Bend the Arc, Stosh Kotler, on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
We know that American Jews continue to hold solidly progressive views on the most pressing social issues of our nation, from the systemic erosion of our democracy, to economic inequality, to mass incarceration, to the full LGBTQ rights, and on and on. I don't believe we see this set of issues reflected enough in our communal agenda. For example, when an elected official is taking meetings with the Jewish community, I put that in quotes for those of you listening on radio, taking meetings with the, quote, Jewish community, and asks what the Jewish community cares about and wants to talk about, how often is that elected official met by their Jewish constituents who respond, fighting for racial justice is a top priority for our community. I'd like to hear your platform on racial equality for our city. What is it? We know that 81% of American Jews favor higher tax rates for the top income earners because we know this will help preserve our precious safety net programs. While several communal institutions do an absolutely incredible job of providing social safety net services and even advocating for social safety net services in D.C., they end up being silent on actual issues of taxation, the very revenue source that supports these programs. We know that a majority, 56% of American Jews, say that working for justice and equality is the essence of what it means to be Jewish. I would challenge us to look through the budgets, the programming, and advocacy of our communal institutions to see if 56% of their efforts contribute to working for justice and equality. They don't. And I would ask us why not. We know that a majority of American Jews, individual Jews, 76% of us who voted against President Trump in the 2016 election because we heard in his rhetoric echoes of the most painful chapters of the Jewish experience. Some Jewish organizations, Bend the Arc, Jewish Action included, responded with everything we had. The Anti-Defamation League made powerful and brave statements to call out anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim bigotry. Yet at key moments, when foundational American principles of religious liberty and non-discrimination were under attack, many of our largest communal institutions and our umbrella organizations were mostly silent, just when their voices and power were needed most. That contributes to a very dangerous public narrative in our country about what Jews care about and how we leverage what political power we have. I want to emphasize that I said many institutions, not all, and I want to specifically recognize the commitment of the local JCRC of San Francisco, the Peninsula, Marin, Sonoma, Alameda, and Contra Costa counties to speaking out against the rhetoric and the bigotry and racial injustice underlying our nation's politics and policy. So, Yasher Koach, amen, way to go, thank you so much, and let's keep going. But my overall point stands, which is as a larger community, our institutions, the institutions that claim to speak for all of us in this room have backed away from our authentic and radical roots. And I hope we, have to ask ourselves why. As large majorities of the American Jewish population have grown more affluent, more integrated in the American power structure, taking up formal positions of leadership in finance, culture, business, and government, have our Jewish institutions become out of sync with individual American Jews in an effort to preserve this relatively newfound power, even if it doesn't represent the views and the values of the majority of Jews? including many of those individual Jews who hold those positions of power. Again, we know from the data I just shared, individual Jews have remained a staunchly liberal constituency. It's the organizations that claim to represent us that have gone silent or moved vocally and publicly to the political right. Is this act of being an agitator or a prophet or a rabble-rouser, is that only possible for people who are structurally disempowered? Does success and prosperity automatically defang the underdog? Or are we as a people as brave and as willing to fight injustice as we ever were, and it's time we demand that our Jewish communal institutions reflect the worldview and the will of our community? We are facing a crisis, not just in our nation's politics, but within our own community. We are facing what I consider to be a crisis of Jewish communal purpose. I say communal purpose because despite how well organized our community is, despite the influence we are able to wield institutionally, we have lost our way. In the dangerous days ahead, the distance between the views of a majority of American Jews and the communal institutions that claim to represent us only threatens to grow larger. If we're not leveraging our collective resources for good, and let's be clear that the resources that are often bound up in those Jewish institutions, who are we? What do we stand for? What has our history taught us? And why be Jewish in America today? And here I want to transition to my third point, which is why this is the time for Jews to unleash our underdog tradition. As I alluded to earlier, we are contending with a tsunami of conservatism coupled with an impending slide towards authoritarianism. We are also living in a moment when our country is grappling with some existential questions of national identity and power. Who is an American? Whose America is this? Whose life matters? And whose lives matter much, much less? These national challenges and questions of our national identity require a response from our community. They require a response from our community. This is a moment to sound the alarm and take action with everything we've got as individuals and as a community represented by public Jewish institutions. To be Jewish in America today is to be living in a moment that calls out for a practice of everyday revolution, plain and simple. To be Jewish in America today means embracing an authentic Jewish identity that prompts us, in fact, demands us to resist demagoguery and tyranny. To be Jewish in America today, we must fortify ourselves for the long haul through word and deed that reflects our tradition's deepest ideals and paints an irresistibly beautiful picture of the future we are working towards. These are some of the pictures of the future I want to be part of. When Jews are back acting on the front lines within multiracial, multi-faith, multi-class coalitions, making real, tangible changes that improve the everyday lives of people living in this country. When we create sacred community that feeds our souls and helps us live into our greatest aspirations as ethical people, building a more ethical world. When we understand ourselves to be a multiracial and multiethnic community and support the leadership of Jews of color, as well as Sephardi and Mizrahi Jews. When we have taken the time to weave and build back the relationships between Jews and non-Jewish people of color, low-income people, people of different faiths, and when those relationships, specifically across race and class, get re-knitted, something that we've, I believe, desperately and sadly lost over the last 5 decades. This future for our community will only be possible if we fight for it. This future of our democracy, and therefore the aspirations of America itself, will only be possible if our community does our part in the most expansive, the most holy and righteous resistance movement forming right now. The good news, I believe, is that American Jews, we were made for this moment. That Emma Goldman spirit at the core of our tradition, Those radical roots, those are what empower us to rise up to meet this challenge, to meet this now. And so in doing that, we can reclaim a powerful and authentic communal purpose. The Jewish people and the Jewish tradition itself were actually really designed for survival. The Jewish people and the Jewish tradition itself were designed, when we think about it, for social transformation. We are the people who left one home over and over again to find a better one. We are the people who fought empires for religious freedom and won. We are the people whose central liberation story of slavery, escape, and a promised land has itself inspired countless other liberation stories across the globe. We are the people who have defeated Goliaths with nothing but our slingshots. This is what it means to be Jewish in America today. Some of us are the children and grandchildren and descendants of people who fled inhospitable lands across centuries, Inquisition Spain, Tsarist Russia, Nazi Germany, fundamentalist Iran, to find a safe harbor. We are the descendants of the huddled masses, the tempest-tossed, yearning to breathe free. Some of us are the children and the grandchildren and the descendants of slaves and or Native Americans, having a radically different perspective of our country and what it has stood for, and whose stories of survival and resilience are absolutely necessary in these times. This is what it means to be Jewish in America today. We Jews have been at the forefront of every significant social justice struggle in the United States for the last few centuries, from labor organizing to suffrage to civil rights to women's rights. Why back down now? A generation from tonight, when our grandchildren ask us what happened in this chapter of history, when they ask us how Jews responded, we must be able to say we used every tool, every avenue, every ounce of Jewish communal resources to resist these unacceptable times. We will not silently inherit this nightmare. We will fight for justice because that is what it means to be Jewish in America today. I want to move into the final part of my talk this evening, and I want to share with you what my vision for our Jewish community is in this moment and into the 21st century. I have a vision that we as a Jewish people will boldly face this new reality and mount the all-hands-on-deck response that is called for, that we will mobilize in the streets and speak truth in the halls of power, that we will give our time, our money, our hearts to resisting the tyranny that threatens. To accomplish this, at Bend the Arc, we've proposed the following framework. The first, all Jews and all Jewish organizations have roles to play. We must each determine what our greatest contribution can be towards achieving a vision of our country and our world that upholds the Jewish values of equity, justice, and human dignity. Jewish organizations that tend to avoid what I'm going to put again in quotes, politics, for fear of alienating members or donors, which is most often, if we're being truthful, the case, must consider the cost and the consequences of silence. From sermons in the Bema to advocacy on policy issues to in our homes and schools teaching our children about empathy, diversity, and inclusion to ensuring our Jewish communal organizations continue to fight for programs like SNAP and Medicare to synagogues joining other houses of worship, providing sanctuary, there is a role for every Jew and every type of Jewish organization. Number two, amplify the voices of prophetic vision and moral courage. So this is a big one, though. Jewish teaching and Jewish spiritual guidance can fortify us. They can nourish us, sustain us for the long haul. Rabbis, Jewish practitioners, spiritual practitioners of all forms, historians, healers, can offer emotional and intellectual sustenance through teachings, gatherings, ritual, and wider-reaching mediums like things like webinars. Taking these steps will build up individual and communal spiritual resilience practices. Additionally, when we emphasize values-based solutions rooted in moral courage, we can open hearts and minds and build bridges. Number three, Speak truth about what we're seeing by calling out the dangers of undiscerning nationalism and the rise of a new kind of fascism. When Bend the Arc Jewish Action began mobilizing our community to these dangers, we called our campaign, "We've Seen This Before." Because as Jews, the truth about what we're seeing is all too familiar with the most painful chapters of our history. The scapegoating of immigrants, the demonization of religious minorities, the intimidation of the media, the threats of mob violence and state violence, and the flagrant disregard for the truth. We know these signs point to the possible erosion of our fundamental civil liberties and democratic society. For the safety and well-being of our neighbors and our own community, we will add our voices and take action at the earliest signs, which is now, of the curtailing of civil liberties and freedoms, like Bend the Arc did in our multi-faith petition to get President Obama to dismantle the Muslim registry before leaving office. We will call on activists, lawyers, and other vested parties to join large-scale national and local efforts to prevent the erosion of constitutional and civil liberties. And we, and this is so, so important, we implore our Jewish community to resist any attempts to pit, again, in quotes, Jewish interests against the rights and liberties of others, or trade the rights and civil liberties of others for the promise of Jewish security and safety. Fourth, deepen relationships and join broad coalitions with the most vulnerable members of society currently on the front lines of hatred and bigotry. Hate crimes are rising. Communities of color, immigrant communities, Muslim communities, and other religious minorities who have already been living in fear and danger and violence are likely to experience increased violence in the Trump era. It's happening already. We know this. The Jewish community must honestly assess the depth of relationship or the lack thereof with non-Jewish people of color, immigrants, and Muslim communities. Only then can we establish and cultivate relationships with these frontline communities to learn more about one another and to demonstrate mutual support. By joining local and national efforts to build authentic relationships with multiracial, multi-class, and multi-faith communities and coalitions, we will demonstrate that fear cannot and will not divide us. Number five, expose and dismantle white supremacy. White supremacy is the superstructure that upholds and reinforces the other systems of institutional and interpersonal oppression, such as racism, anti-Muslim bigotry, sexism, homophobia, and anti-Semitism, among others. Building a shared understanding around this framework is crucial because it allows more and more of us to perceive the systems of oppression around us that are invisible to some, but profoundly visible to others. In this moment, when many Jews feel a visceral and profound fear, we must not retreat into our parochial enclaves and hope that Jewish figures like Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump's proximity to power will prevent acts of anti-Semitism by actors inside the administration and its supporters. Instead, we must understand how white Jews have inadvertently benefited from white supremacy, how participation in white supremacy is actually dangerous for everyone, including all Jews, and how we must renew our commitment to dismantling white supremacy, both inside and outside the Jewish community. Number six is using inside and outside power. In partnership with our non-Jewish progressive allies, we should encourage artists, musicians, writers to create culture that provides a compelling message of what we want, of what an equitable and inclusive democracy looks like, really what it feels like, what it tastes like, what it smells like. Make it so visceral that we want it so bad that we're going to do everything to get it. Jewish organizations and leaders who have access to decision makers in the private sector, at the municipal, state, and federal levels, and to progressive organizations and grassroots activists must apply pressure on all of these domains. Strategic campaigns that mobilize the grassroots and push moderate Republicans to peel off from their colleagues that unconditionally support growing authoritarianism should be utilized whenever possible. Number seven. Be prepared and willing to escalate. Many Jews have experienced relative safety from anti-Semitism for decades. Now, however, Jews are once again experiencing fear, with Jews of intersectional identities facing particularly increased danger due to racism, homophobia, transphobia, and/or other compounded issues of oppression. By taking steps to educate people now and sharing the costs of mass trainings and skills building, we can prepare our community for acts of civil disobedience and public resistance. And I would say those of us, myself included, who have enough resource, feel safe enough, pass enough, are not going to be fired, should put ourselves on the line first.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's program features CEO of Bend the Arc, Stosh Cutler. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
Number 8, find ways to work together across our communal divides. In working to protect the civil rights and liberties of vulnerable communities, including our own, we must put aside the litmus tests that have previously divided our Jewish community and act with unity and conviction in areas of alignment. We must understand this is an urgent moment that requires all of us to participate fully. Communities, non-Jewish communities who are currently in danger, cannot afford our internal infighting and do not benefit from our internal divisions. Number 9, help Jews take action as Jews. Like many organizations that have been active in the Jewish social justice space, Bend the Arc is seeing a significant influx of Jews across the country who want to take meaningful action in cooperation with others, and other Jews in particular. It's imperative that we maximize this opportunity to demonstrate to the next generation of Jews coming up that engaging in social justice work and political advocacy can and should be a fundamental feature of their Jewish identity. We must demonstrate the liberal values we uphold are also Jewish values, and that acting in the public square as a Jew is meaningful and so critically important at this time. And finally, number 10, put Jewish financial resources to work towards building the future we want. We are a philanthropically generous community with a history of funding people, organizations, and movements that have dramatically improved the lives of others. Jewish philanthropists can leverage their relationships and make the case for investing in a new vision for our country, with directly impacted communities leading the way. Jewish business owners and private sector entrepreneurs can promote radical values-based economic approaches, such as a triple bottom line that measures not just financial impact, but positive social and environmental impact as well. These are not new ideas by any means, but they are so necessary. So, just imagine if we embraced this call to action. Imagine if every Jew and every Jewish organization did something from this list. Imagine if this were our expression of Jewish communal purpose. Wouldn't that be truly galvanizing and be something you'd want to be part of? I have the incredible privilege of leading a set of organizations, Bend the Arc, a Jewish Partnership for Justice, which is our 501c3 organization, and Bend the Arc Jewish Action, which is our 501c4 organization, our political organization, which also includes Bend the Arc Jewish Action PAC. A year before the election, when a long-shot candidate for president said we should register all Muslims to a list, we felt compelled to speak out. And we launched a year-long grassroots mobilization of the Jewish community against the threats of this election. And we have seen a response from our community the likes of which we have never seen before. In the last year, 75,000 people have taken action with us to respond to the gravity of this moment. Since November, we have grown from having a list of under 20,000 to now having a list of people who are connected to us almost at 90,000, at 85,000 plus. Just last week, we had a conference call where 500 people from around the country joined in to learn about and talk together about how they can take action in Kansas City, in Pittsburgh, in Atlanta, as well as the more obvious places like New York, Los Angeles, and here in the Bay Area. We are growing so rapidly and connecting with Jews across the country because the same righteousness and justice that has flowed through the veins of our ancestors, we now feel is flowing through ours. This is the moment for us as a community to reignite our commitment to communal risk, to communal courage, to communal solidarity. This is the response that this moment requires of us. This is the response that 21st century America needs from us. There are 1,435 days left until the next presidential inauguration. Let's make each day one of sacred revolution. Our tradition demands it. Thank you.
Anyone have any questions? Hi, I just want to thank you so much for your remarks. I thought they were incredible. And I wanted to ask you to expand a bit on the piece you were talking about how we can both sort of create a role for every Jew and tap the resources of our institutional Jewish community as well as form new alliances and new structures. And I just want to say, you know, personally from my own context, I'm a millennial Jew. I'm not connected to many parts of institutional Judaism. I am part of Ben the Ark, but you know, more than that, I've just, you know, never been a member of a synagogue, but I'm very ready to be an activist with, you know, Jewish and non-Jewish friends in other sort of ways and structures that I'm part of. Contrast that with my mother, who is a very active member of her synagogue on the East Coast, yeah, and reached out very early to the clergy at her synagogue, asking them to organize a bus, volunteering her help to organize a social action contingent to the Women's March, and was shut down very quickly. You know, it's a Shabbat, we're not sure, we're going to see what the RAC does, we'll see what the Reform Movement says, you know, just that sort of cautious response that was really alienating to her. And she was sort of forced to then go outside and organize with her friends and, you know, find another way to participate.
Yeah.
So how do we, you know, again, create a role for every kind of Jew, myself, my mom, everyone in between, and different than us, so that we're not alienating, you know, our own community. We're encouraging other people to act in the ways they're comfortable with, but also pushing beyond the comfort zone. Because as you point out, if not now, when? It has to be right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I have anything more to say. I think that you said it, really. I hope that the people who are either in positions of institutional Jewish leadership or know people who are able to hear what you just described as someone who has a family member who's deeply connected to Jewish institutional life, who you yourself have not found as many avenues, are finding a home with Ben the Ark, which I love, of course, but are also asking this question of when are our institutions going to be listening more deeply and embracing more fully the leadership and the vision of young people who are coming up and who actually have a very, very clear and beautiful idea of what they want this country to look like and what they want the Jewish community to be. So my greatest hope is that your description of yourself and that story just gets kind of told and told and told. And, you know, my feeling is that we have a Jewish communal infrastructure that was created at a time in Jewish history in this country when Jews had a radically different experience than many of us have right now or have had over several decades. And so it makes sense that these institutions were formed in the way that they were, they served the purpose that they did, and that they have, in my opinion, they're large, they're bureaucratic, and they're just struggling, I think, at this moment to find how they are going to maintain relevance in 21st century United States life. My greatest hope is actually that they listen to young people and that they take the lead of young people and determine that those incredible resources that they have can actually be turned and used towards the things that you see as the future. And my hope is that there are organizations that are in the Jewish social justice space. There's now an entire Jewish social justice roundtable, which is relatively new. Just, 10 years ago, we didn't have a field of Jewish social justice. It was only in the last 7 years that we have a Jewish social justice roundtable. We tried two other iterations in decades past, and not only were there not enough Jewish social justice organizations that existed, but the ones that existed were tiny, and the people who were running them couldn't figure out how to get along, and so it failed twice. I mean, we know the story, right? Or I don't know if you know that story, but you know stories like it. And it's actually pretty tremendous that right now the Jewish social justice roundtable has over 50 different organizations that are part of this network. So we are growing as a movement. This is the future of Judaism. The question is, are Jewish institutions going to transition with us? Or are we just going to continue to go forward? And I hope that they transition with us.
Hi. So thank you for sharing your thoughtful and thought-provoking vision. You mentioned several times large Jewish institutions that are not speaking for us. And I have to say, I'm lucky enough to be a member of a small Jewish progressive synagogue, but I have not been in mainstream Judaism very much.
Yeah.
So I've been sitting here wondering if you're comfortable if you could name those kind of large stream Jewish institutions, because that feels like that should be an achievable goal that we're pushing on so many fronts right now. If we can't push our own institutions, it feels like that's something we should be able to do.
Yeah.
Maybe we could achieve it tonight, if we leave.
So I want to say that I'm going to say this with love, because I love the Jewish people and I love our community, and I want us to be part of making our world different. But the Jewish Federations of North America sent out a statement congratulating President Trump. That we have, there are lists, but there are a number of federations that have actually made positive comments about the administration. There are organizations that are inviting people like Jared Kushner to speak. Like the JCPA is inviting Jared Kushner to speak at their event in 2 weeks. I don't know if he's going to say yes or not. This is the reason I'm actually saying who these organizations are, is because they need to hear from our community that this is unacceptable. They need to know that this is actually, again, this is not about politics, everyday politics. This is not about Democrats, not about Republicans. This is about fascism. And this is about our survival. So there are ways that you can get this information to find out if you like Google what Jewish organizations and statements. There's actually a list of like the roundup of Jewish organizations. I don't know what it is. But if anyone is interested, if you contact Ben the Ark, we can get you the link to the roundup. But let's just say it is not pretty. Let's just say that I feel very sad about how our community has responded institutionally to this moment. But I also want to say that, thank God, we still have time to catch up and actually turn it around. So that's what we can do.
So I want to come to you from the other direction of what you just said. And thank God for you and for Ben the Ark for calling people out the way they need to be called out. I'm just went through a job search, and I had to be really clear with congregations where I was interviewing about who I was. And I decided in this moment, inspired partly by you, I was going to do that. I was told really clearly by one congregation, we're not picking you as our rabbi because we don't like your political agenda. I was like, great, thank God you're clear about it. The position I'm moving into, they feel differently for the most part. There's a couple of voices who don't feel that way, and I'm starting to feel that little gnawing fear and that, oh my goodness, these people pay my salary, and should I rein it in a little bit? My good friends at Ben the Ark, how are you helping the people who want to come from the other side and say, I'm going to take this risk? Are there resources? Are there things you're giving that we can give out to congregational boards? Are there networks of people that can meet, you know, secretly and talk about how we're secretly plotting the overthrow of the organized Jewish world to stop being schmucks? Like, are you going to come? Are we working together? Are you helping us? Are you standing with the rabbis and the executive directors and the people who are trying to do this? What you're saying we should do?
Yeah, that's a great question. Great question. Thank you. Well, you know, we do actually have resources, and we are continuing to generate more and more resources because we have lots of people who want to get active and they want to have tools that they can use to be informed and to talk to their family members and their friends and their colleagues, et cetera. So yes, I would encourage everyone to visit Bend the Arc's website and to be getting on our list so that you hear about calls and all of that kind of work. And I also do very much want to say, and part of the reason why we created that 10 different ways that Jews and Jewish organizations could get involved is because I hope it was clear, even though the title of my talk is pretty, you know, bold, like revolutionary Judaism. But the fact of the matter is that not every single person either identifies or feels comfortable either with that language or that point of view. And there are still many things that we can each be doing in our organizations that can be doing that are still part of solving this very, very dire problem, even if we have different styles of doing it. And I do think it is important that we look at the full ecosystem of the Jewish community and we understand that we are not trying to create 10,000 Bend the Arcs, although, of course, part of me says, yes, of course we want that. But really, I mean, this is actually about having a thriving and healthy Jewish community that has moral clarity and has convictions and values that are simply put into action. It does not mean we have to be holding up our fists every single time. It does not mean that every single person needs to sit down in the street and block traffic. It does mean that when someone said something racist, that we learn to talk about racism and just say, hey, that thing that you said, I just want to talk about it. It does mean that we can have honest conversations in ways that people can begin to be receptive to them. And also for ourselves, listen to what we might not know and is getting in the way of our seeing another perspective too. So I do want to say that while Bend the Arc is an unapologetically progressive organization, we do see ourselves within a Jewish community that has many, many different points of view. I think the critical piece is what are we all doing collectively to have our institutions hear some of the responses that are coming out of this audience and understand how out of sync they are and that there are some other really practical and not impossible things that institutions and people like you working within them will be able to do.
BINA is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guest was CEO of Bend the Arc, Stosh Kotler. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Brandon Battaglia, Dan Folds, Alex Espalet, Maya Finley, and Jake Gukowski. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rasha Neem Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. BINA is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.